Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Another week and lots of cool stuff to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, Don, one of the biggest boat shows in the water ever, and a couple more things, too. So we'll be right back with that and more. Hang tight. Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies? Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Good to see you, Donald.
Yeah, it's good to be seen.
I was unable to communicate last week, so apologies to listeners for that. I was in Fort Lauderdale and had no signal to do a deal from the hotel room. It was spotty, which is weird.
You're in a big city there. That's why I was kind of surprised that you'd have trouble.
Well, and being at the show, trying to find some place to do it at the show was the other part, because I thought, well, I'll try and do it at the show, and there's nowhere where I could do it at the show and have laptop and work at the same time, so it made it very difficult, let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
So, but nonetheless, we're here.
We're here this week.
And the show was amazing. If you've never been or heard of the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show, they call it FLIBS, Fort Lauderdale.
Is this show open to the public?
It is open to the public.
Okay.
And it is amazing, I will say that. The number of large boats, the number of accessories, the number of things going on. There's actually two locations. It's similar to Miami. If you haven't been to Miami, I'll describe it to you. But they've got a convention center that has all the boats and the retailers that are at that location, plus some other smaller. So imagine the Minneapolis Convention Center or something similar. That size, big, massive, with good-sized boats.
You're talking a trade show floor.
Yeah. You know, the convention center type scenario.
Yep.
Yep. That's full of small to medium boats, meaning upwards of 45-footers.
Sure.
Then you go to a separate site that's about 3 miles away, 2 miles away, 3 miles away.
So the convention center is not on the water?
It's close, but not there.
Well,
so they have a marina. Yeah. I mean, but they're right near the water. But you go further up the shore or the inland waterway area, or that waterway.
Larger marina.
Yeah. And it's the big area for the in-water aspect of it. And there's more boats there than any boat show in the world. And it is beyond belief.
More than at Miami?
Yeah. More boats than Miami. But see, that's the difference. It's the largest in-water boat show. Miami is one of the largest
shows. Other than Lake Michigan or Superior, we're probably not seeing many of those types of boats on the water in the Midwest.
Of the bigger size, yes. The number of center console boats and some of the new Axopar, they've come up with a boat that's pretty amazing. It's a full, like a cab boat, but luxury, indoor, so you could be warm inside, and they call it similar to what's referred to as an Alaskan bulkhead, where it's a full cab in the center, and air conditioning, heat, full little kitchen thing. Underneath, they've got a forward berth, and out back, you could be set up for fishing with downriggers, etc., but it is, they've got a variety of them out there. And
so how big of a mortgage would you have to get?
Well, you know, probably a fair size. You know, that's right around that Right around that four bill mark.
Yeah. Ouch. You know?
There's another company that does customs. Get this. So if you want to look it up, guys, this is crazy. It's a company called Brabus. They do customized Bentleys and high-end vehicles. So what they'll do is they'll take a Bentley and they'll go in, tear apart the interior. They'll take the interior out.
Of a Bentley?
Of a Bentley. Then they redo that, reupholster, redo the dashes, redo the exterior. They'll make it look like, they're carbon fiber, hood scoops, different brake calipers with the branding on it. The interior will contrast with red and different stitching. And the bottom line is you can buy what would be referred to a Bentley that would look like kind of a Jeep, right?
Okay.
Around $497,000.
Yeah.
Small four-door Jeep, Don.
Right.
You know, kind of a square blockish shape.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. But they do the same to the boats, which is amazing. They're just completely customized. And this is the variety of what goes on at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show. They have such a large variety. So you've got boats from 18 feet to 250 feet. With
yachts,
hot tubs, and two levels,
helicopter pads,
helicopter pad, a court. Well,
of course,
Don, what 250 foot boat? I mean, you would be remiss if you didn't have a helicopter on your boat. So that was one of those awakenings that you know, this is like the one percenter of the 1%, but they're there.
Yeah, I mean, like I was fortunate to be in a marina in the Bahamas one time, and it's an eye opener. There's somebody in the world's got a lot of money.
Yeah, and designers. A lot of money. Well, and you think about the designs that go into these boats. Now, a lot of the designs have changed. So if you look, they're not the classic swept back bows on a lot of these boats. They're going to what's called, if you're into the military, the Zumwalt style, the stealth. The bow goes kind of forward a little bit, and a different look to it. But they're also finding how those are really the wave and how they're attacking them. Like I said, the Axopar, they're using those in a lot of the pilot boat types. The rescue boats out in the English Channel, they're using these boats because they're literally almost the unsinkable scenario, but they ride the waves differently than the classic hulls did. So a lot of development in hulls is taking place right now, and you can see that transition and constructions and how they're doing that kind of thing. So really blows you away. I mean, you're looking at dashboard graphics. They're all flat panel screen.
Oh, sure.
And it's transitioning to our, the upper Midwest side. We're getting those flat panel screens. So.
Just out of curiosity, how many electric boats did you see?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Totally electric boats.
Yeah, not necessarily, the go fast, but there's a lot of boats that were approaching that electric side, still not able to really get to where they need to be. That's going to be a ways out, quite a ways, in fact, I would say. So don't look for them in your neighborhood store anytime soon.
Okay.
So, well, tell you what, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. More Valley Outdoors and some cool stories coming up. Hang tight. Welcome back, everybody. Like to have you check us out, thevalleyoutdoors.com. And where else, Donald?
On Facebook.
Oh,
the Valley
Outdoors. I thought
Outdoors.
You forgot.
Well, I almost forgot what you asked.
Oh, well, paying attention is part of the deal.
I was trying to think of something else. Wasn't expecting you to throw it to me.
Wow. I thought this was a relatively simple show.
It is.
It really is, Don.
Yeah.
It's not a difficult thing. It's not rocket science.
Anybody can sit in
Anybody
this
can. Yep. Even a caveman can do it. Now my forehead doesn't slope back that far yet.
Okay.
That's a good thing. I'm so glad. But we're going to have some of those pictures posted, and you sent those to me, and I'll post those up on Facebook pretty quick from the Fish With Us deal. And we're already starting to work on next year's stuff, Don.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Already I'm excited.
Yeah, kind of if you go online, it'll tell you just to be patient and
be waiting.
We'll let you know. We'll let you know what's going on.
Don't hold your breath. Deer hunting. That's apparently coming up, Don.
Yeah, it's coming up all over the Midwest.
Yep, everywhere.
Minnesota, it starts today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this morning, everybody's either out or if you're not out on a beautiful Saturday morning, you're sitting in the cabin having coffee because it's pouring rain. Which, you know what? Oftentimes when the weather's that bad, my response is, I don't hate the deer that much.
Yeah.
I really don't. And one thing, you know what's funny? I actually went bow hunting, and it was Thanksgiving. I think it was a Thursday morning Thanksgiving, and I said, I'm going to go out and go deer hunting a while. And it was ugly, wet snow, rain, and crap, right? There was snow on the ground. And I said, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to heck with it. I'm going to put my waders on. So I have felt waders, and I put scent on the felt waders.
Yeah.
I thought, what the heck? Instead of dragging a scent, let's see how it works. And it was awesome. Walking and stalking in those boots was fantastic. I never got wet. The key is don't work too hard because they don't breathe very well.
Yeah, move slow.
Yeah, slow and deliberate. I saw one of the biggest deer I've ever seen that day. It was amazing, but, you know.
Was he still in the field at the end of the day?
I was walking in the heavy snow. It was cool. You walk in the heavy snow, and it's really quiet, you know, and the woods are quiet. And all of a sudden, you hear this, like, charging coming from my left, and I'm walking down a trail, so I'm looking straight ahead, and I'm looking at a trail. I pulled off to the side when I hear this crunching going on. I mean, it was big time, like hard running. Mm-hmm. And here comes this doe and a fawn, runs right by me, and stops about 40 yards to my right around a big alder, group of alders. You know how they get kind of big? And then behind it, here comes the buck just chasing. I mean, he was no more than probably 40 feet in front of me.
Sure.
Didn't see me. Of course, he's not paying attention to me. He runs around, stops on the opposite side of this. Now, this is the perfect condition. It's heavy, big, wet snowflakes. You can almost hear the snowflakes hitting. I see the doe. I see the fawn. And I got my bow. And I did a slow rotate. And that was the perfect position. And I can see the buck through the alder, big, tall alders and whatever. And he was standing on that side of it, and the doe and the fawn, they didn't see me. They didn't scent me. The wind was light wind blowing towards me. And I'm standing there, and I'm ready, and I'm like, they're turning away. I pull, and I go full draw. And I'm waiting. And I'm waiting.
I bet it actually happened faster than you're telling this.
And I'm waiting. No. It was no more than, I mean, it had to be at least 3-4 minutes. Of course, I dropped off full draw. I'm waiting. The fawn and the doe.
Yeah.
Spook. Something else spooked them.
Oh, sure.
They take off. The buck's like, what am I around here for?
See ya.
And I just watched a beautiful, it was 10 plus points. And I'm like, well.
So much for that day.
But
you know, I'm planning to be out tonight. Got a trail cam out.
Okay.
And we've been marking quite a few does on there, and now we've had a couple of really pretty decent bucks that showed up. So today, what have I got? Two of the largest raccoons I've ever seen standing right in front of the camera. And here late this
The bandits are after it.
Yes. And next, what do I have? 10 turkeys.
So wrong time of the year, Don.
I know.
You need to educate them.
Yeah, well, all the deer hunters know it's...
That's like the deer crossing
signs,
Don.
Most of the deer
Don.
You pick up on your camera, most of them are in the non-shooting hours.
Well, an important thing that I think you and I talked about a little bit about off air, that quite a few people that they get out opening weekend and they miss a shot, they don't know why, right? How could I miss, right? But unfortunately, a lot of people go out, they don't necessarily sight in their rifle, they don't understand their sight picture, what you're looking at when you're looking at the reticle or the crosshairs, which is called a reticle, and you don't understand it. But one of the big things, and I was looking through a lot of different articles and things that were going on, and parallax came to view, and I know parallax, you had experience with parallax, we'll talk about that in a minute, but Parallax is the easiest way to explain it is if you hold your cell phone up and look at it at one eye, and then in everything beyond the phone moves side to side when you switch eyes, right? So it's moving.
Well, you have a dominant eye.
Right. And two reasons. First, your eyes are about 2.5 inches apart, so that's one thing. And your eye looks at a phone, that situation differently. But it also happens because the stuff beyond your phone is beyond it, right? So it's a different position. Lay the phone on the table and do the same thing. Everything still shifts the two eyes, but the phone and the table, it stays together because they're in the same place.
Sure.
So the whole point comes down to understanding the reticle, or imagining the reticle in your rifle scope and everything behind it is the image, right? So whether it's the target or an animal or whatever, your goal is to get the reticle from stop moving. So you put your eye up to the scope and you experience this,
yep.
You can put your, if it's not set up correctly, you move your face, the reticle will move. And it's not in the right position. It's also, you find that you can only see a little bit of a focal point. The rest is black. And that is a key point to it. And, you know, what ends up happening is, in this particular situation, you end up having the need to have that fixed. So what are you going to do? You need to have it adjusted. Your story. Really,
well,
fits perfectly.
Well, one of the things that happens, I had my... picked up a Savage 220. We use slugs in this area. It's 20 gauge, and I had it mounted at the store with the scope. And come to find out, you get out in the field of starting to target shoot, and you cannot. What happens is, if your distance from your eye to the face of the scope itself isn't the right distance, you don't get a full picture, and then you find yourself trying to move your head around to try to find that picture in there. So the only way to correct that is to get situated that you're in a comfortable place, in a firm place where you can get your cheek on the rifle or the shotgun, and you can bring it up the same every time. And once you determine where your shooting position is, you have to remount that scope, and you bring the scope back to where that picture becomes a full circle.
And it doesn't move. The reticle doesn't move.
And you're going to be spot on as soon as you bring that up to your shoulder, rather than you're hunting for it. So it's you know, you might have to go back to the store if you don't know how to do that, or watch some YouTube videos or something of that nature to learn how to do it. But you do need a scope mounting kit to be able to do it, because you have to put it on properly.
True, and you know, one of the things that why should you care about it? Why would you want to deal with it? So one of the guys in here is talking about, he has a 4.5x14, so it's an adjustable 4.5 magnification to 14x40, which is field of view, VX3. And he sets the parallax free at 150 yards, and he doubles the distance and the most parallax he can have at that point. It's equal to the diameter of the scope objective lens, which is 40 millimeters. Makes sense. There is an adjustable parallax on that. So what he's hoping to do is, if he has his head move as far as possible off center line of the scope, he's going to be able to see the reticle, and it's most 1.5 inches away. So realistically, like you said, Don, if he tries to center his eye behind the scope, the more realistic maximum amount of parallax at 600 yards should be 3 inches or less, so you don't have that movement.
And you got to be really careful, because you don't want to be too close, because you know what happens when you pull the trigger.
It's called bite. You call it bite.
Yeah, I was with the gentleman that was sighting in his rifle. We're going on an elk hunt, and he took first shot. It was a 375, and he had a
H&H.
Yeah, had a ring around his eye,
and it's not of any other color than red.
Yep,
it'll leave a mark. Pilfer for that.
Oh yeah, it was bleeding.
Yeah, so take the time. Look at some of those things called parallax. And if you're missing a shot, you know, ask if it's an inexperienced shooter, you're somebody you're with, do you make sure when you bring it up, you know, in the night before or the morning of, you can look at it and say, okay, you need to make sure your positioning on this is the right position, and you're going to get a better shot. You're going to make sure you hit where you're aiming. And it's not the question of the big one got away. So keep that in mind for your next trip out. And if you didn't hit, maybe check that out when you get home. So Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors coming right up.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world.
Whoa. For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Hey, Donald. We both made it back.
We did.
Yeah. We didn't have to venture too far. Going to jump into this quick. We're going to be tight on time, but I want to make sure I get a last story in. But this one always raises my eyebrows. Bird hunter survives an attack from a nearly 700-pound grizzly. The Montana Department of Fish and Wildlife has urged bird hunters to exercise caution in and around the Nine Pipe Wildlife Management Area south of Ronan, Montana, after that grizzly encounter. Great Falls, Montana, nearly 700-pound grizzly bear charged out of thick brush southeast of Glacier National Park, attacking and injuring a bird hunter before the man shot the animal, wildlife officials said on Wednesday. The 51-year-old Washington man, whose name and hometown were not released, was left with injuries that were not life-threatening after the encounter in a creek bottom east of the town. And the man and his wife were hunting on private property when the dogs went on point. And the spokesperson for the state wildlife department said he went to flush a bird when a 677-pound male bear charged out of the brush, knocking the man over and stepping on him. The man fired at the bear with a shotgun and a handgun, wounding the animal, which returned to the cover of the thick brush. The couple and their dogs left and notified authorities. The grizzly bears are protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act, but state and wildlife officials decided the bear had to be euthanized because of its injuries. A drone was used to locate the bear. The man did not suffer claw or bite marks, but he did spend the night in hospital. The bear had not been known to have any history of human contact. How would you like to see your dog go on point and then instead of a
bird flushing?
Pheasant or quail comes out, something much larger comes out of the chute.
Yeah, oh, that would be gasp.
Gasp. I think that would probably be the worst. I mean, that would be like the scariest thing you could ever possibly. I can't even imagine, because I've seen the videos of guys that were filming and knew that were bears. And that was terrifying enough just watching. You remember the one we were talking about in Alaska?
Yep.
And to see this happen. And he didn't get clawed, which is...
Or bit,
which is good.
Yeah, he's very fortunate.
Very fortunate. So, yeah, stay vigilant out there if you're out. Who knows nowadays, there's a large range of mountain lion are also...
They're less likely, though, to attack because they're really hard to find. But I have heard of cases. I literally was with a guide in Idaho that had his backpack on, and the back of his backpack was all sewn up. And I said, you know, can't you, what happened? And he goes, it's where the cat got at me. But he never, it was the only day he didn't have his pistol with him. So yikes. He ended up in the middle of a river to get away from him.
Well, before we wrap up, Don, we got to hit quick hitter. We're going to talk about making sure you're safe in the woods. A couple things to make sure you think about before and during your day in the woods. A, obviously, properly tag your deer. That's a big thing. You know, obviously, that's relatively simple. Everybody knows you need to tag your deer when you shoot it at your location. Know your firearm and how it functions. Understand if you have a jammed round, do not try to unjam it in an unsafe manner with somebody around, explain to somebody, hey, the gun is jammed. Make sure you communicate that to people in your party if you're at the truck or the car and you're trying to unload. And if you're going to unload, you don't have to chamber the round. Drop your belly, drop a clip, or open the belly and drop your rounds out and then catch them as they come out. The other thing, too, is on the safety side of it. When you're moving a safety, understand how much noise that safety makes. Because if you're going to move the safety, and this is from a can you get the big one thing, you click a safety, a deer immediately hears that's not natural in the woods. So understand, if you move the safety, slide it slowly, engage that to a firing position, but do it slow and easy. Make sure you do that. Know the target and what's beyond it. If you're taking a long-range shot, make sure you understand what is beyond that target. If it's a long-range field shot, especially in those things where there's not a lot of trees. Respecting landowner rights, always have the permission. If you have to chase an animal to or onto private land, make sure that you notify whoever that might be that there is a wounded animal in a private property. You would like to go get it. And if you do go get it, at that point, make sure that they have approval of either bringing a weapon with you or not. Public lands, it's there for everybody. And make sure you know that. And last but not least, be respectful to other hunters. If you see somebody else in the woods and you thought you were going to have your own spot, hey, there's somebody else is there first. Move on from there.
And don't forget to register it.
Yep. Register that deer and follow all compliance with a disposing of the carcass and or transportation. Keep that up. And that's a wrap for us. The Valley Outdoors. Have fun out there in the woods and be safe.